Welcome back to Jump Scare. I'm Betty.
And I'm Shad.
And this week we cover Richard Stanley's Color Out of Space.
Look at this.
All those years in the big city, we finally got out. We're living the dream.
Maybe it is a dream.
Everything just blew up. Big flash, like a pink light. Or actually, I don't even know what color it was. It wasn't like any color I'd ever seen before. It
looks like a meteorite.
You think it's radioactive? I mean, it's from space, right?
Meteorites are generally no more dangerous than ordinary rocks.
How can something that big just disappear? Did you plant those?
No.
Ward, you come here for a sec.
Oh, God.
What are you doing?
Shh. It's talking to me.
Who's talking to you?
A man in the well.
It's in the static. It's in the moisture. It's in here. It's out there. And what's out there is in here now.
Everything's under control.
Why are you so in denial? That ding from the meteorite changes everything around it.
It's just the color. No! But it burns.
Do you believe me now?
I don't know what I believe anymore. Everything's gonna be A-okay.
I have so many things to say. As I always say in every beginning of every podcast, that's like my trademark thing now. I have so many things to say.
All right, well, let's start it.
Well, we were very honored, I guess. Can we be honored? To have our local art house bring this film to us in the Central Florida area. And I have to say, I love Hardware. Had no idea at the beginning that Richard Stanley was attached to this. And then once I heard that he was, I was like, I'm there. Bring it on. He's only made three films, I believe. And it's been a while since he's been on the scene, but he has not lost his touch at all. Shad has some interesting stories in regards to him, because he is a character.
Sorry, I was trying to stop the cat from destroying things. That's the hazard of living with cats. Sometimes you have to stop podcasting to stop them from destroying the world. Richard Stanley, he's an interesting guy. There's a whole documentary about him that's available on Netflix, I believe, still you can get, called Lost Soul. And he was the original director of The Island of Dr. Moreau, the one that came out in 86 that had Marlon Brando, Val Kilmer, and all of them in it. And he was replaced on the first day of shooting. But instead of just going away quietly, he pretended to leave, then went back. Had one of the makeup guys make him up like one of the animal people that was on the island, and he just stayed and watched the whole production destroy itself and laughed to himself, thinking, wow, I could have done so much better.
But because he was within contract, he got fully paid for it,
yep,
right?
Yeah, he got all the money.
Which funded the next thing he did.
Which was to go search for the Holy Grail.
Because, you know, when you're like, I made all this free money, I'm going to go search the Holy Grail.
That's what you do with that sort of thing. And he's interesting, even in the... we'll talk more about it later, but there's a scene. They showed some excerpts from a Q&A that they did in Los Angeles after the movie. And at one point, they're explaining how he brought meteorites to the set and is rubbing them together and getting like what looks like blood to come out of them. And he's like, oh yeah, they tell you you can't get blood from a stone, but they tell you you can't fly and you can't breathe underwater. But those are all lies.
I thought you were going to hold that for the end, and you just couldn't help yourself.
You're like, I couldn't. It's so exciting.
You're such a nerd. He's definitely a very unique human being, and you can see that in the films that he creates. We usually don't discuss score and editing, but I did want to say something about the score and the editing of the film. The score is by Colin Stetson, and it goes so well with what's happening in the movie. What, you know, the alienic feeling visually works well hand in hand with the music, which the best of movies overall have good scores. And the second is the editor, who is Brett W. Bachman, or Bachman. I would say Bachman because it's like, you know, Bachman. And he actually, this is his third film that he's edited. They've all been with Spectrovision. He did Mandy. He did Daniel Isn't Real. And he's done this one. And he does an excellent job. Just the flow of the film is just, it works really well with what's going on. And I never felt like, oh, like, you know, let's get on with it.
Yeah.
So he, and all his, well, I can't really speak about Mandy because I've yet to see this film. I'm not really into psychedelic movies. I have like a fear with psychedelics, but I did see Daniel Isn't Real during the Popcorn Frights, which if you've heard our podcast, you know that we had an interview with the director of that film, Adam Egypt Mortimer. And he also did that movie as well. So let's talk about the plot of the film.
Now, this is based off a H.P. Lovecraft story of the same name, slightly spelled differently because, of course, Lovecraft spells color the British way with a U.
The right way to spell color.
Maybe. But the story starts off the same much as the movie. You know, it's with a description. You're hearing a guy talk about the typical Lovecraft thing. It's like, ooh, there's a primordial forest that no one has ever gone to. No one has ever looked at it. The problem with a lot of the Lovecraft things is a lot of the stories, he just says, and then an unspeakable horror came upon them. No one could describe it. It was so terrifying. You know, so there was no description of it. So it's really, in the movies, a lot of times, it's really open for them to do whatever the hell they want, because he was just like, it was unspeakable.
Yeah, it's one of those things that it's just really up to the director on what they want to, like, how they want to film it, and then, you know, the people that are doing the story, what they're going to fill in the blank there.
Yeah.
Because there are a lot of his things that people have said are hard to put onto film because of that.
Yeah, when there's no description, it's just kind of up to you.
The family is transformed by a meteorite that releases a high pigment color.
Yeah, well, let's mention the fact that it's Nicolas Cage, and he's is playing the father, and he's raising alpacas. Animal of the future.
Okay, it is the animal of the future. And the high pigment that it's emanating is radiation. If you had to, like, humanize, if you had, I think it's high radiated.
It's radiation or some kind of energy coming out of the rock.
I would say it's radiation from, it's a meteorite, so I'm going to go with radiation.
But it, the first night it's there, it just kind of hits the ground and stays. Soon afterwards, there's a storm, lightning comes, the meteorite disappears. I kind of got the idea that it sunk into the earth when it was suspiciously near their well.
Yeah, definitely. It lands on there and it, the meteorite affects the water. They make it a point right at the beginning of the movie, before the meteorite hits, to show how much this family, especially Nicolas Cage, is really into the water from the well. We have to drink the water from the well. Like, at first, I thought the whole movie was just a social commentary on bottled water, because they mentioned bottled water a lot. And that's because if they had said bottled water, they would not be in the mess that they get into, pun intended, later on at the end of the film.
But yeah, obviously, you know, they're drinking the meteorite soaked water. Everybody's getting effects from it, some more than others. And then as it goes across later, the meteorite starts, or something is emanating from the barn. There's lots of crazy things that start happening around there.
Now, a lot of people are going to think that this, as I've already seen, like, come some reviews and, you know, just overhearing people while we were watching the movie afterwards, that, you know, like, there was, like, it's a bad movie. Like, it's a B movie. And, you know, it's because of the acting, isn't it? It's like, whatever. And then, like, you think Nick Cage nowadays, that's like, you are like, oh, God, it's going to be either terrible. Like, he has two levels. Either he's going to bring the movie down or he's going to elevate the movie. And, you know, a lot of the times, a lot of people would say that he brings the movies down within the last, I would say, maybe like 5 to 7 years. I did not interpret that at all that way for this film, because once they, you know, ingest the meteoronic, can we say that? Meteoronic? I'm going to make a word up. Water, the contagious, contaminated water. They start transforming, you know, and their personalities, like, the parents are, like, very old-fashioned. At the beginning of the film, you see they're close-knit, you know, you have your usual issues with the teenage, you know, kids, and but they're very, the mom and the dad are very old-fashioned, you know, don't cuss, and the mom even says, you know, tells her daughter, like, look what you're wearing, what kind of message are you putting out there, which, you know, in today's world, that's like, oh my goodness, what? She could be walking out naked. That doesn't give anyone the excuse to do anything. And it doesn't. But back in the day, a lot of people would say, maybe you shouldn't have done that if you didn't want that unwarranted attention.
Yeah.
You see the family transform later on, and how the mom and the dad, especially Nick Cage, his performance goes from, like, regular dad who's, like, a little kooky, to, like, major kooky. Like, yeah.
He goes from kooky to crazy.
Yeah.
At first, it's, he's just telling you about the, he's milking an alpaca, and he's telling you about how it's the animal of the future, and you're like, oh, okay, he's one of those guys that's got a crazy dream, and he's never going to give up on it, no matter how bad things get. He's going to keep milking that alpaca forever until he gets forcibly dragged from the farm.
And then once it becomes the talk of the town, the mayor and everyone comes out, the news van comes out to interview him and the family. And of course, he comes out like a crazy kook. But remind you, he's already had several glasses of water from when the meteorite, you know, gets sunk into the ground.
And even if he wasn't having the water, he was using the ice made from the water to put in his whiskey or his bourbon.
Or his scotch, whatever it was, some brown drink.
And they make a point of showing that later. He's drinking the whiskey and it's like, ooh, Nicolas Cage a little drunk is bad, but Nicolas Cage drunk on meteorite water? That's real bad.
It's real, real bad. To the point where he's like, the alpacas! Like, he's screaming about to the police officer, the sheriff that's come over to, like, check everything out. Like, oh, you guys okay? He's, like, yelling, like, about the alpacas, which is really funny.
I want a t-shirt with him just yelling alpaca on it, the picture of Nicolas Cage. Screaming alpaca.
We can make that happen.
Excuse me.
So, that was my thing with the movie. Like, I hope, you know, it gets... I thought the movie was excellent. I'm going to jump ahead and just give it... I give it 3.5 knives. I thought it was a really good film. I was very entertained. It's a body horror film. It's within that genre. So, it's a body horror Lovecraftian film, which kind of, like...
Most of the Lovecraft stuff is pretty body horror if you think about, like, even the movies that are made from Beyond, Reanimator, Dagon, all the movies and the books all kind of go around, you know, body transformations, and not in a pleasant way.
And, you know, I'm sure that this is going to come off like, oh, this movie is just like bits of every other movie, but it's like people that make movies, directors, writers, they're influenced from things that they grew up with. And if you're someone that's really into horror, you're going to know about Lovecraft. That's something you're going to read, you know, and you can't help when you're writing a story for said elements to get into that. I wouldn't compare it per se to some other films, but I would say that it did remind me of The Thing only because of the mix of the alien and human DNA and how it created a new form.
Yeah.
And that is where it ends. Well, and also, obviously, it came out from space.
Yeah, there's... It's hard to do when you do anything now. Like, some movies are so iconic. Like, The Thing is such a big part of, you know, like, horror fans all know that. If there's anything even remotely with, like, a massive alien or, like, something fused together or looking creepy, it's like, oh, The Thing. And that's true. There could be some homages to that deliberately, and then some of it could just be, hey, this is how the story plays out, you know?
So I would definitely recommend it for someone, you know, recommend going there with an open mind. You know, don't think about anything. I was very apprehensive to see the film because, you know, the trailer alone is very Mandy-like with the color style. Like, it looked just very psychedelic, and I knew that it was going to be kind of like Lovecraft, so the imagery I felt like I was going to have a lot of issues with, but I was able to get through the film. I closed my eyes at some parts, but I forced my eyes open like Clockwork Orange style to watch the rest of the film, and I'm glad that I did, because it's something that you don't want to miss. There's some very freaky parts, not going to give away, but there's definitely some really horror-esque, gruesome body horror heart parts. I'm also not really into body horror, even though I've seen a lot of body horror. But it's like, you can't, when it's done well, you can't not look at it. And I think the body horror, once the transformation is, like, complete, it looks okay. I liked the beginning of the transformation. It was very disturbing, but...
Yeah, this is one, too, that the sound is just as important as color and the effects, because, you know, in the visual effects, rather, because a lot of the sounds that go on in this are just very unnerving. I think that's why it's good to see this one in the theater, because you get the sounds coming from all around you, you know?
Yeah, and also, Stanley has such a unique eye, you know, that we were mentioning before, his unique dude. But he has such a unique eye that even though it might just seem like a normal, you know, camera, you know, however the technique that he's using, you know, but it definitely, what he does adds to, like, the suspense of the film and, like, you seeing things from different perspectives also adds to the, like, the horror of it,
the creepiness of it.
Yeah, because it's just like you're not seeing it normally, like I'm a person looking at something. You're seeing it in different ways, like how Hitchcock used, like, in Strangers on a Train, when she gets choked out, you see through her glasses, like the image on the glasses. He uses that a lot in the film, not per se glasses, but just different ways via mirror or reflection or things like that. So I just thought that was like the bee's knees, because I really love Hitchcock. It just reminded me of Strangers on a Train, and I just, you know, like the how he films his stuff. Like, he's kind of like a genius, and it's like this is his third movie.
Now, I've seen Hardware, of course, and I've seen this one, but I haven't seen the other one he did called Dust Devil. And I don't really know what that much about that one, but I kind of want to look it up now and see what the hell that one's like.
We got to fucking find this movie, because we are missing out Dust Devil. It sounds insane.
Or it's probably going to be one of those weird, like, mid-90s horror movies where it was like, oh, and he got tornado powers, but I could be wrong. I really haven't looked it up. I'm picturing it to be him, like, in, like, the duster coat, like the Western duster coat, just, like, cruising across the desert in that coat, like, riding a tornado.
Okay.
So I'm probably going to be disappointed, but I'm anxious to see that movie anyhow.
Okay, so please, someone, make this movie that he just described, because maybe I want a Dust Devil. But we can't call it Dust Devil. We're going to have to come up with another name.
We'll just call it Twister 2.
Oh my god, that's terrible. The color in the film, so the whole thing, obviously it's the color out of space, so you're gonna have to have a very unique color that people have not seen before, which is impossible because, you know, it's color, we've seen colors.
Yeah, and this everywhere. Is another one of those things, too, I'm sure in the story is described as an undescribable color, something your mind can't imagine. This is the color that you're seeing. It's like, oh, okay, well, that helped me picture that. But they do a good job of it. It's very, like, much like Mandy has kind of like that magenta hue. That's what this is, but it changes a lot. It's not just straight magenta. There's other colors mixed in with
purple,
it.
Purple, green.
There's a lot of things going on. It's kind of hard to... I wonder if they had somebody that was... They were just like, put some colors in there that'll fuck with people. And just have everything kind of twisted around, you know?
Yeah. Oh, man. There's, like, some crazy crazy scenes in the movie. I love how the meteorite affected the water, obviously. But in that, because it went in the ground, which makes sense, obviously, because how did it get to the water? And also, how did it literally change the environment on the land? Like, you start seeing, like, crazy flowers and trees come up and all kinds of foliage and shit.
The tomatoes are coming up like giant tomatoes with a weird shape to them, you know? They look kind of like gourds or something instead of tomatoes. They're, like, huge.
You know what just dawned on me? Nicolas Cage, he was smelling like crazy shit. Like he kept saying it stank and it smelled like death and it smelled like a burned dog. Like he had all these, like, it may not have been a burned dog, but he had all these different descriptions on what he was smelling. But if it was if it was radiation that they were ingesting, like they were affected by that, then wouldn't that, isn't that one of the things, like, when, not when you have a stroke, but you smell like something burning? Because he did mention that in the movie, and I think that...
It could be part of it. It could be just, too, it's just showing that it's, like, affecting him. He's starting to maybe smell things other people can't. You know, he's smelling rotting things that they're not, you know?
Yeah, the mom and the dad get the mom and the dad get affected very fast, like, next day fast. Because he's always drinking in the movie. And so, like Shad had mentioned before with the ice, and he's obsessed with the water from the well. So is the mom. The mom drinks, she's, you know, staying hydrated and whatnot. And if not, he's giving her water. And she's also drinking, like wine. I don't know if she put ice in there, but so the kids, not so much, because that's a complaint with the kids. And you really don't see the son, the second eldest, really go through it too much. It's more so that, and the daughter gets like affected the most at the end because they're drinking less of the water itself.
Yeah.
And I find it funny how there was they kept saying the hydrologist, right?
Yeah.
He's coming over doing like a survey, and that's how, you know, you're always going to have that one person in the movie that is the person that's supposed to bring the knowledge and the whole shit. This is what's really going on.
He's Dr. Exposition.
Yeah. Dr. Exposition.
Yeah, that's my new superhero.
Ding. The doctor was in. Sorry. So
I'm picturing that, like, the stand with, like, Lucy from the Peanuts, except the doctor is Cthulhu. And it has the thing that says the doctor is in, and he's, like, leaning on the little board, like, I'm here to explain everything.
He better have a fucking monocle and a top hat. and a fucking Jack the Ripper, like, the fucking doctor bag.
Yeah, that's one of those.
Wait, hold on. Pause now. No. We're having, a pause moment where we're just going to laugh for, like, the next 20 seconds of our stupidness. Yes, please, also, let's make that a movie as well. Dr. Exposition. So, yes, Dr. Exposition comes in and he is trying to help the family and, like, oh, shit. But, yeah, he can't help them. They fucked. They're really fucked. And this movie is not fucking forgiving. Like, it's like, oh, you think we're not going to attack, like, the family dog? Oh, well, like, the alpacas get it. everything in the fucking movie gets hit. Everybody, more or less.
I don't even get a good look at it. This will be one of those ones when it comes out on Blu-ray that I'll want to pick up, and so I could pause it for some of it. But, man, I don't know what happened to Tommy Chong's cat, but whew, that thing was fucked up and crazy looking when it went running by that one time. It kind of reminded me of Extro, the scene where the creature crosses the road in the middle of the night, and they're like, what the fuck was that? And just the people just keep going, but... Yeah, the cat, there's some interesting transformations in here.
Yeah, I definitely closed my eyes for that part. I was like, oh, fuck no, I'm not looking at that.
And a lot of the stuff they do in this, now a lot of this is probably digital, but a lot of the stuff, they do a lot of practical effects in it because it's people sitting around. You can tell the difference between someone that has makeup on and someone that's a digital effect, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of the makeup used in this.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did we motherfucking forget to say that Tommy Chung is in this fucking movie?
Yeah.
Like, when he shows up, first of all, he's in the beginning. The movie opens with the credits. You see his name. So I'm like, oh my God, Jesus, who is this guy going to fucking be? Exactly who you want him to be.
I was expecting him to, instead of drinking water and having problems, I was expecting him to roll up some of the new alien plants and smoke them and have issues. That would have been hilarious to see him. He's like turned into like the fucking scorpion man or something in there from smoking the alien weed.
Smoking the alien weed. Oh my goodness. And then you're going to be seeing, that's a crazy, like, this is like weed. You're not going to see colors. That's more like mushroom bullshit, like acid kind of thing. But this is how intense this fucking radiated weed is. Radiated weed. Boom.
There you go. That's our band name, Radiated Weed.
That is a fucking amazing band name. So the movie ends and it's time for the Q&A.
Now, the Q&A is the director, Richard Stanley, and Nicolas Cage, and it's being hosted by Patton Oswalt, which I don't know how they got him involved in this, but he...
We love him.
Yeah, he's great. I love when he first showed him, like, at the beginning of the movie, it comes on, and he says, okay, you know, we're going to have the Q&A afterwards. Everybody enjoy The Rise of Skywalker. You're like, well, okay. So then at the end, he comes back, and he's introducing them, and you can tell that Patton Oswalt is the most normal guy on that stage because he doesn't really know what to do. Like, after Richard Stanley says the line about, oh, well, yeah, you can breathe underwater and fly and everything, he just kind of sits there for a second. Nicolas Cage says something, and he's like, oh, thank God, because I had no idea how to follow that up.
So, do you think it got weird, or because Patton Oswalt is obviously in the Hollywood world, you come across said people, you know, and within your inner circles? When Nicolas Cage came out, which he was like a couple of minutes late because he's like Nicolas Cage and then nothing. He didn't come out. But when he like strolls out and he's wearing a moth studded leather jacket that has patchwork of leopard print on it, a biker's like fanny pack with like fucking chains, and the largest belt buckle I've seen in my life.
It was shy of like a wrestling belt buckle, you know?
When he strolls out, does Patton Oswalt is like at that moment like, okay, this is what I got myself into or whatever. Or is it like, it's just Nick Cage. That's how he rolls.
I'm pretty sure that everybody in Hollywood has just run into him and it's like, it's just Nick Cage.
Did I say it was a moth studded leather jacket? Or maybe, you know what, I'm gonna assume is a leather jacket. Maybe he's like real like whatever, maybe it's not leather, but it's definitely, there's a huge moth, beautiful, in the back of his jacket. It looks like maybe he went and like went back in time and stole what's her face's jacket from Heart, you know, that she was wearing, because it looks like a chick's jacket. I'm not gonna lie, it's the least manliest leather jacket in the fucking universe. He may have gotten it from when he was in space.
And then Richard Stanley comes out and he's dressed like a like old, you know, he's got the black outfit on, black cowboy hat, like the bolo tie. He's also wearing like a necklace. He's got a couple of necklaces on. One of them has got like, it could be an owl. And the other one is like the logo that was showing up at the end of the movie, like during the credits. There's a logo where it's like, it's showing all the production company names. And instead of a name, there's just this like kind of skull looking logo. And he's wearing that around his neck. So guessing that's his production company. But, and he, I don't know what that guy was on, but it was good stuff because his eyes were not looking the same direction sometimes.
And they were mad glossy. And he looked like Santa Claus because his face was all red. But just, I mean, if anyone had, I hope this is on the Blu-ray when it comes out because I need to see, unfortunately, we weren't able to watch the full Q&A. So I would like to see what else they spoke about. We left kind of like when the cast, who happened to actually be in the audience, Nick Cage and Richard Stanley are like, yes, please come up, you know, and the rest of the cast comes up and they discuss the films further. So we kind of missed that part. But so who knows what kind of shenanigans they get into there.
But yeah, it's I don't know. I just want to hear that guy talk about more things. I've heard him talk on some other podcasts, and he's definitely a character. Like, you know, he has his own personal warlock that accompanies him places. And he said they came up with the idea for one of the movies. I can't remember which one. Oh, it was the short film he did in the theater bazaar. They came up with that because they went to Toys R Us and just bought one of those Ouija boards. And the Ouija board gave them the basic plot of the movie.
You know, I feel like that's a like bunch of shit because when I buy my Ouija boards from Toys R Us, they don't give me anything. I get nothing. I get.
But like, do you have your own personal warlock with you?
I don't, and I'm gonna have to put a call to Julian Sands.
Yeah, see what he can do.
Yeah, let's. I'm gonna just lure him here with my fucking crystals and my gems. And see with my druid sigils, and I'm going to lure him. He's going to come over here and help me out with this Ouija board so we can come up with an amazing movie.
That'll make more sense later when we review Warlock 2 coming up. We'll just sneak that in there. So later on when you're listening to Warlock 2, you'll go, oh, I see what they did there.
We see what you did. So yeah, I give the film 3.5 stars. It's going to be knives and stars. I give it everything. Well, it is color out of space, so I give it
star 3.5
star meteorite knives.
Okay. The knife blades are forged from the meteorite.
Correct.
Yeah. But yeah, I would agree with that too. I had a good time with it. There's a couple of parts that I had to kind of laugh at, but for the most part it was good. I enjoyed it. A couple of crazy things Nicolas Cage says that you're just like, oh my God, he went the full Cage on that one, didn't he?
He did go the full Cage a lot. But I talked to my sister a little bit about the film, and she had asked me, like, have you seen Nick Cage's movies in the last 5 years? Like, that's his thing. And I know, per se, that's his thing, but I feel like his performance and the performance of the other actors is exaggerated from after they get the meteor because they're affected by that and their DNA is literally altering.
That's why it didn't really ruin it for me. It's a little out there, but you know, you're seeing, you know why. It's not just like he's a normal thing happening.
Yeah.
So that's why I give it the 3.5 knives too.
I did want to say before we wrap up that visually we did discuss that, you know, that the color was fantastical and visual effects were great. And CGI and practical effects and all that. But the beginning of the movie is just, before it gets into the color, it's just so aesthetically, like, beautiful. I mean, the land is beautiful. The house is its own character for me because I love set design. And I want to fucking live in that house. Like, it looked like an old, like, one of those old houses where the, I wouldn't say window or door, but it kind of like a patio door. I don't even know how you would even explain it, but it opened up to the patio, whatever it's called, the wraparound porch.
Yeah.
But it just reminded me of like Southern times, like that kind of like, you know, Clark Gable-esque, whatever the fuck movies are, Gone with the Wind, you know, like you're just open to air out the house. You open this big fuck door, but it's not really a door. It, you have to see it. The film was, the movie was filmed in Portugal.
Yeah.
So I'm sure, I don't, maybe this is a set on on location, like a house on location. If so, the house is gorgeous. And it unfortunately has to go through some terrible fuck shit. Like, I'm not going to be buying the house after I see all that shit happen to that family. Because it's just like, I'm going to need the house. That's like, it's like the fucking ad where you're like, the house costs $1. And you get there, you're like, I don't know. The house costs $1. Is it haunted? And you're like, yes, it is haunted. That's why it's $1, you idiot.
It can't be as bad as the house I looked at with a friend of mine one time. We went there to look at the house, opened the door to the bedroom. The floor was gone. It was open all the way down to the foundation. Just no floor in the bedroom. Now, I'm 100% sure that shit comes out of there at night and kills you if you live in that house. So it was like, no, we couldn't get out of there fast enough.
That reminds me of the gate.
Yeah, it was bad.
The fucking little demons come out.
And then the real estate agent's trying to explain, like, oh, no, you can fix that pretty easily. It's not going to be that rough.
Yeah, the rent's $595. It's fine.
No, we're gonna leave, thanks.
No, who the fuck is like, oh, okay, yeah, I'm just gonna put a floor over that. What are you talking about? It looks like a fucking, like, a hole, a black hole. What is it called? The sinking hole?
Yeah, the sinkhole.
The sinkhole.
Yeah, no, I'm not, we're getting out of there, thanks.
I have one more thing to say before I do my sign out, and okay. I'm gonna say, this is what you want, this is what you get. Thank you so much, and stay tuned to the horror.
And now, folks, it's time to say goodnight. We sincerely appreciate your patronage and hope we've succeeded in bringing you an enjoyable evening of entertainment. Please drive home carefully and come back again soon. Good night.